The following is an evening darshan given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on October 20th, 1987 at New Taliban Farm in Carriera, Mississippi.
গুপ্ত শাখা প্রেমের বান্দার প্রভুহৃদয় দ্রভে শুনে দৈন্য যার। Translation: Murari Gupta, the 21st branch of the tree of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was his storehouse of love of Godhead. His great humility and meekness melted the heart of Lord Chaitanya. Purport: Sri Murari Gupta wrote a book called Sri Chaitanya Charito. He belonged to a Vaidya physician family of Sri Hatta, the paternal home of Lord Chaitanya, and later became a resident of Navadvip. He was among the elders of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya exhibited his Varaha form in the house of Murari Gupta, as described in the Chaitanya Bhagavat Madhya Lila 3rd chapter. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu exhibited his Mahaprakash form, he appeared before Murari Gupta as Lord Ramachandra. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu were sitting together in the house of Srivats Thakur, Murari Gupta first offered his respects to Lord Chaitanya, then to Sri Nityananda Prabhu. Nityananda Prabhu, however, was older than Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and therefore Lord Chaitanya remarked that Murari Gupta had violated social etiquette, for he should have first shown respect to Nityananda Prabhu and then to him. In this way, by the grace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Murari Gupta was informed about the position of Sri Nityananda Prabhu, and the next day he offered obeisances first to Lord Nityananda and then to Lord Chaitanya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave chewed pan of betel nut to Murari Gupta. Once Murari Gupta offered foodstuffs to Lord Chaitanya that were cooked with excessive ghee, and the next day the Lord became sick and went to Murari Gupta for treatment. Lord Chaitanya accepted some water from the water pot of Murari Gupta, and thus he was cured. The natural remedy for indigestion is to drink a little water. And since Murari Gupta was a physician, he gave the Lord some drinking water and cured him. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared in the house of Srivas Thakur in his Chatur Bhuj Murti, Murari Gupta became his carrier in the form of Garuda, and in these pastimes of ecstasy, the Lord then got up on his back. It was a desire of Murari Gupta to leave his body before the disappearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but the Lord forbade him to do so. This is described in the Chaitanya Bhagavat Madhya Lila chapter 20. When Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu one day appeared in ecstasy as the Varaha Murti, Murari Gupta offered him prayers. He was a great devotee of Lord Ramachandra, and his staunch devotion is vividly described in the Madhya Lila 15th chapter, verses 137 through 157. Murari Guptera Prabhu Kori Alingan Tar Bhakti Nishta Kohin Sune Bhaktogan. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then embraced Murari Gupta and began to speak about his firm faith in devotional service. This was heard by all of the devotees. Purveyami Hare Lubhai Lobarobar Parama Madhura Gupta Brajendra Kumar. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Previously I induced Murari Gupta again and again to be allured by Krishna. I said to him, 'My dear Gupta, Lord Sri Krishna, Brajendra Kumar, is the supreme sweetness. Swayam Bhagavan Krishna Sarvamsi Sarvasroi Visuddha Nirmal Prema Sarvarasamoy.' Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the origin of all incarnations and the source of everything. He is pure transcendental love itself, and He is the reservoir of all pleasure. Sakal Satguna Brindha Ratna Ratnakar Vidagdha Chotur Dhira Rasika Sekar. Krishna is the reservoir of all transcendental qualities. He is like a mine of gems. He is expert at everything, very intelligent and sober. And he is the summit of all humors. Madhura charitra Krishna madhura vilash chaturcha vaidagdha kore jar lilaras. His character is very sweet and his pastimes are melodious. He is expert in intelligence and thus he enjoys all his pastimes and mellows. Say Krishna bhajo tumi, how Krishna sroi, Krishna bina anna upasana mune nahi loi. I then requested Murari Gupta, worship Krishna and take shelter of him, but for his service nothing appeals to the mind. E mato baro baro suniya vachan, amar gora bhe kichu fire gelo mon. In this way he heard to me again and again. By my influence his mind was a little converted. Amare kohenami tumara kinkor, tumara gyakariyami nahi swatantro. Murari Gupta then replied, I am your servant and your order carrier. I have no independent existence. Ato bole ghore gelo chinte ratri kale, Raghunatha tyaga chintai hoilo vikale. After this, Murari Gupta went home and spent the whole night thinking how he would be able to give up the association of Raghunath, Lord Ramachandra. Thus he was overwhelmed. Kyamone charibo Raghunath racharan, aji ratri prabhu mor koraho moran. Murari Gupta then began to pray at the lotus feet of Lord Ramachandra. He prayed that death would come that night because it was not possible for him to give up the service of the lotus feet of Raghunath. Ehi mato sagoratri korena krandan, mone so asti nahi ratri koilo jagoran. Thus Murari Gupta cried the entire night. There was no rest for his mind. Therefore he could not sleep but stayed awake. Prata kale asi mor dhurilo choran, khandite khandite kichu kore nivedan. In the morning, Murari Gupta came to see me, catching hold of my feet and crying, he submitted an appeal. Raghunathir payamui, bechiyacho matha, karite na pari matha, mone pai beta. Murari Gupta said, I have sold my head to the lotus feet of Raghunath. I cannot withdraw my head, for that would give me too much pain. Sri Raghunatha charan chara na jai, Tava agya banga hoi kikara upai. It is not possible for me to give up the service of Raghunath's lotus feet. At the same time, if I do not do so, I shall break your order. What can I do? Tate more ye kripa koro doya moi, tumar age mrityu hok, jau ka sansoi. In this way, Murari Gupta appealed to me, saying, kindly grant me this mercy because you are all merciful. Let me die before you so that all my doubts will be finished. Ato suni ami boro mone sukha pailu, ihare utaya thobe alingana koilu. Hearing this, I became very happy. I then raised Murari Gupta and embraced him. Sadhu sadhu gupta tumar sudriha bhajan, amar bachane ho tumar nato lilo mon. I said to him, all glories to you, Murari Gupta, your method of worship is very firmly fixed. So much so that even upon my request, your mind did not turn. E mato sevakera priti chahi prabhu pai, prabhu charai lai ho podo charana na jai. The servitor must have love and affection for the lotus feet of the Lord exactly like this. Even if the Lord wants separation, a devotee cannot abandon the shelter of his lotus feet. Purport. The word Prabhu or Master indicates that the Lord is to be continuously served by His devotee. The original Prabhu is the Lord, Sri Krishna. Nonetheless, there are many devotees attached to Lord Ramchandra, and Murari Gupta is a vivid example of such unalloyed devotion. He never agreed to give up Lord Ramachandra's worship, not even upon Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's request. Such is the chastity of devotional service. As stated in the Antya Leela of Chaitanya Charitamrita, 446-47. Se bhakta dhanno jena chare prabhu charan, se prabhu dhanno jena chare nijo jan, dudaive sevak jodi jayanno stan, se thakur dhanno tare chule dhuriyane. In a firm relationship with the Lord, The devotee does not give up the Lord's service under any circumstance. As far as the Lord himself is concerned, if the devotee chooses to leave, the Lord brings him back again, dragging him by the hair. Se bhakta dhamma, that devotee is glorious, jena chare prabhu charan, who does not give up the Lord's service under any circumstances. E mato tumar nishta jani bara tore, tumare agroho ami koilu bare bare. Translation, just to test your firm faith in your Lord, I requested you again and again to change your worship from Lord Ramakshanda to Krishna. Sakat hanuman tumi Sri Rama kinkor, tumi kene chari betar chora na kamal. In this way I congratulated Murari Gupta, saying, indeed you are the incarnation of Hanuman. Consequently, you are the eternal servant of Lord Chandra. Why should you give up the worship of Lord Ramachandra and his lotus feet? When Lord Chaitanya was showing the Mahaprakash, he always took the role as a devotee, but one time, induced by Advaita, he went into the ecstasy of being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In that ecstasy, everyone could see the effulgence coming from him and could see the total spiritual energy. And Lord Chaitanya revealed to each devotee his sarup, who he was in the previous pastimes. Murari Gupta was called. Prabhupada explained, Murari Gupta looked, instead of Lord Chaitanya there was Ramchandra, standing with his bow, green complexion. And Murari Gupta looked at himself, and he saw that he was no longer Murari Gupta the physician. He was a monkey. He was Hanuman. And when he realized that he was Hanuman, and Lord Chaitanya was non-different from Ramchandra, he became so overwhelmed he fainted on the spot. When he came conscious as Lord Chaitanya, and he was back. So Lord Chaitanya was just testing his devotion to Lord Ram. How can Hanuman change from Ram? No way. The Lord Chaitanya continued to say, Say Murari Gupta, hey, mora prana sama, ihara daina suni mora fataye jivan. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, I accept this Murari Gupta as my life and soul. When I hear of his humility, it perturbs my very life. This way, Lord Chaitanya, he was glorifying his different devotees. Murari Gupta was the householder. How he lived his household life, Prabhupada explains. Patigraha nahi kore, naloya karomo dhan, atavritti kore kore kutumba bharan. Srila Murari Gupta never accepted charity from friends, nor did he accept money from anyone. He practiced as a physician and maintained his family with his earnings. Purport, it should be noted that a grihastha householder must not make his livelihood by begging from anyone. Every householder of the higher caste should engage himself in his own occupational duty as a brahmana, kshatriya, or vaishya, but he should not engage in the service of others, for this is the duty of a sudra. One should simply accept whatever he earns by his own profession. The engagements of a brahmana are yajana, yajana, patana, patana, dana, and pratigraha. A brahmana should be a worshipper of Vishnu, and he should also instruct others how to worship him. A kshatriya can become a landholder and earn his livelihood by levying taxes or collecting rent from tenants. A vaishya can accept agriculture or general trade as an occupational duty. Since Murari Gupta was born in a physician's family, Vaidya Vamsa, he practiced as a physician, and with whatever income he earned, he maintained his family. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, everyone should execute his occupational duty, and thus he should satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the perfection of life. This system is called Daiva Varnashram. Murari Gupta was an ideal grihastha, for he was a great devotee of Lord Ramachandra and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. By practicing as a physician, he maintained his family, and at the same time satisfied Lord Chaitanya to the best of his ability. This is the ideal of householder life. Except for the brahmanas, no one else is allowed to take charity. The brahmana takes charity not for himself, but to use in the service of Krishna. Otherwise, the brahmana can give classes and accept dakshin from his students. For brahmana, whatever he receives, he'll give the surplus away in charity, so the brahmana always remains very simple. He said that it's more glorious for a brahmana to pick up the grains that are left in the field after a farmer has harvested than to accept employment. Because by even picking the grains from that field, in the Bible there are people who used to do that. pick grains. In India, I saw generally people, very poor people, pick grains. You harvest. When you harvest, you take everything. But a few wheats or rices, a few, you know, there's a few, they just kind of don't make it. So they go with a basket, and they go after you harvest everything, they'll pick up here and there the stray grains, and they'll fill up a basket after a couple hours. They'll go and that'll be enough to feed for a day or two. So the Bhagavatam says that it's better for a Brahmana to do that than to be an employee, because he can remain his intellectual, spiritual independence. But if you become just a servant of someone, then a material employee, you lose your independence. So the Brahmanas, materially, they were very simple. They had a totally different cultural status. Economically, they were very simple in their lifestyle. Of course, some of them who were very great teachers, they would get good many students. They were maybe relatively better off, but they wouldn't hoard like a Vaishya or a businessman. They would use what they needed, and then they would offer it to the youth, and they would give out in charity. So many times they would be having a big temple, and the king would give them some land. And the land would be used for maintaining the deity worship. These are called devatas, where the land was dedicated to the deity, and the deity was the legal owner, and the brahmana acted as a trustee on behalf of the deity, or a sevite. During the British rule, there were some cases that were instituted. Since the owner of the land was the deity, the cases were like Radha, Madana, Mohana versus. So at that time, even some of those cases were appealed up to the House of Lords in England. And they also substantiated that a deity is a juridic person under law and should be treated as a minor is treated in terms of law. That he's the rightful owner, but since he's not acting for himself, he's like a minor, cannot go in the court, the guardian. So whoever the guardian of the deity is, or the sevite, the trustee, is the person who can sign on behalf and institute on behalf, but he cannot alienate the property of the deity or take it as his own. Just as much as the trustee shouldn't take the property of the minor just because he's a minor, then he'd be legally liable. All these things have been confirmed even by English law. I was thinking that in the future maybe we can have such a program even in America, putting land in the name of deity. Since it was accepted by English law, some of our lawyers said it would be an interesting test case if it ever was challenged by American law. Since there's freedom of religion, and this has been accepted not only by Indian but also by English law, the idea being is nowadays you can sell it, you can take away a church. Years ago you couldn't, now you can. You can't take away an individual's private home if he declares bankruptcy. You're allowed a place to stay. So if the deity is the owner, then even if someone, you know, at least they can't take away his house, can't throw the deity out on the street. So the brahmanas, they would have land, but they put it in the name of the deity. And then their children would also become, the eldest son maybe become the sevite, or the whole family would become the sevite of the deity, and they would organize the seva puja, or the worship. So this way the brahmanas would act. So that because they had deities and they were collecting for the deities, they could beg. But if a brahmana was doing some other type of activity, then he wouldn't beg. In some cases, a brahman can act as a kshatriya or a vaishya. It is not recommended a brahmana acts like a sudra. In the modern world, more or less everybody is trained to be a sudra, and very few people are independent. In any case, Mariagupta, he was a physician. So he did his occupation as being a physician. He'd get some fees from the people he was treating. He'd maintain his family and he'd use the rest of his time for worshipping Lord Ramachandra and for serving Lord Chaitanya. In this way he was completely Krishna conscious. Chikitsa korena jare hoya soroi deho roga bhoro roga dui tara koi. As Mariagupta treated his patients, by his mercy both their bodily and spiritual diseases subsided. Purport: Mariagupta could treat both bodily and spiritual disease because he was a physician by profession, and a great devotee of the Lord in terms of spiritual advancement. This is an example of service to humanity. Everyone should know that there are two kinds of diseases in human society. One disease, which is called adhyatmika, or material disease, pertains to the body, but the main disease is spiritual. The living entity is eternal, but somehow or other, when in contact with the material energy, he is subjected to the repetition of birth, death, old age, and disease. The physicians of the modern day should learn from Murari Gupta. Although modern philanthropic physicians open gigantic hospitals, there are no hospitals to cure the material disease of the spirit soul. The Krishna consciousness movement has taken up the mission of curing this disease. But people are not very appreciative because they do not know what this disease is. A diseased person needs both proper medicine and a proper diet. And therefore the Krishna consciousness movement supplies materially stricken people with the medicine of the chanting of the holy name or the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and the diet of prasad. There are many hospitals and medical clinics to cure bodily diseases, but there are no such hospitals to cure the material disease of the spirit soul. The centers of the Krishna consciousness movement are the only established hospitals that can cure man of birth, death, old age, and disease. You put a sign, birth, death, old age, disease hospital. Approved. It will cure you from birth, death, old age, and disease. So, Marty Gupta, he was a very important devotee of Lord Chaitanya. He would cure his patients materially and spiritually. Actually, one day on Gaur Purnima, the big initiation ceremony, so one time there was a Mayapur initiation ceremony, so I initiated one devotee, many devotees, one of those, devotee in particular who's serving in Japan. Then afterwards we went down to the Ganges, so many devotees, maybe hundreds of devotees went to the Ganges to take a bath on the sacred day of Lord Chaitanya's appearance. Then I heard someone crying in the water, help me, I'm drowning. So I jumped in, I swam out. I think my mother had me take a class when I was a child in life-saving. And I turned out it was the boy that I had initiated in the morning. So I brought him in. He had a cramp or something, and brought him. So he said, you gave me my life twice in one day. Spiritually. But Murari Gupta, he would cure every patient, materially and spiritually. You could have a whole book on just one devotee, their characteristics, their qualities. We even developed dramas on how Murari Gupta would take care of his patients. I know that in South America, there's a disciple who's a doctor, actually quite a couple. And when we would give out free food for life in South America, then he would set up a table and give people free medical advice. So people would line up. And so he found that one of the biggest problems is people are taking too much meat or they're having other types of problems. So some of them, of course, he'd give the prescription, the medicine. At the same time, he'd advise them to chant Hare Krishna and take a Krishna conscious diet whenever it was applicable. And the people are coming back and saying that they felt miraculously better all around, kind of following in the footsteps of Murari Gupta. It's not that if someone's a doctor, they have to give up being a doctor to be a devotee, or someone's a school teacher, they have to give up being a school teacher. But in addition to giving their education or giving their medical treatment, they also add a little spiritual touch. People get sick because of generally irregular habits, uncleanliness, anxiety, and overeating. Just like Lord Chaitanya, they gave him heavy prasadam with too much ghee. So it was more than he could digest. He came back the next day and said, I'm sick. It was a little lila. So Murari Gupta said, just gave him a glass of water and it cured him. Sometimes someone eats too much milk, they get loose motion. And the cure for that is to take milk in another form, to take it as yogurt. Yogurt is cooling, and that balances the things out again. So This material world is giving us so many problems, birth, death, old age, disease, problem from our mind and body, problems from other living entities, natural calamities. The same material energy, when it's used in Krishna's service rather than being used in sense gratification, is the cure for these problems. It requires someone to be a bit sober-minded to be able to understand this nature of the material world. That when one tries to exploit the material nature, like the proverbial tar baby, you get just more and more entangled. Where if you try to utilize the material nature in the service of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the same material nature becomes the means whereby one can be transcendental to these influences. One doesn't have to give up their occupation, but if they can use it for promoting Krishna consciousness, or at least for maintaining their livelihood and giving their remaining time, you see, because someone's self-employed, so there's some festival that they can adjust. If you're just working a regular job, it's very difficult. You want to take a day off for Janmashtami or this day, they say, no, we can't spare you. You know, you're not your own boss. You'll be get tied down. I got fired from my job in Canada when I was working to maintain the temple because I went to Janmashtami. It was a blessing in disguise, but that's another story. Horrible job. At that time, there was no book distribution, there was no Sankirtan, there was just the very beginning of the movement. Only three temples. New York, San Francisco, and Montreal. So, but the fact is there, a devotee who's able to live within the community of Vaishnavas, well, he's even more independent of the material, you see. But the scope is there. Someone can be a physician like Murari Gupta, still be a devotee, or do occupations like that. The occupation didn't hold back Murari Gupta because he used his maximum time in the service of Krishna. Prabhupada was self-employed, he had his own business, but he said his business suffered because he spent so much time in printing books for Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and doing other devotional services. So in that way, maybe he didn't become super wealthy, which he could have if he gave his full attention. But of course, he did important services for the spiritual master, and in the end, of course, he was able to preach all over the world and bring it to us, the Krishna conscious movement, here in the Western world. So sometimes we have to analyze what are the priorities in life. And if we follow the footsteps of great devotees like Murari Gupta and maintain our priority of being Krishna conscious as the indispensable priority, the other things must go on. I have to have enough food to eat, a house to live, clothes to wear and so on, healthy body. But as far as many of the other things that one might like to do, that these come after the first priority of being Krishna conscious. Jai Murari Gupta ki!
Jai!
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki!
Jai!
Are there any questions? Pran?
Sri Chapa, faithlessness seems to be a very catchy disease. What do you prescribe against it?
Faithlessness.
You know, lack of faith. It comes over and over. So what do you prescribe for it?
Well, in the material world, people are naturally in a state of low faith or no faith. And the way to overcome that is by practicing Krishna consciousness. Faith builds up by practice. You can read. Reading doesn't necessarily produce faith. Just like you read hydrogen, water is made of hydrogen and oxygen, H2O. You look at it, doesn't look like hydrogen, doesn't look like oxygen. But then in college or high school, they give you some hydrogen, they give you some oxygen, they put it together, light a match, the side of the glass is little beads of water. So then you get faith. It's true. So a lot of times, devotees, they want faith to come like that, to just kind of, just come like by some magic, just to read the book, now I should be faithful. But faith comes from the practical action, applying the knowledge. The difference between theory and realization. When you realize something, you're faithful. Some people are faithful just because of hearing something. It's raining outside, people come in wet, they say it's raining. You have faith. Yeah, it's raining. I believe it. So, It's better to learn, you see, from higher authority, rather than many things. It's better not to have to learn through the school of hard knocks, through the school of Maya, Maya Sukaya. Devotional service, faith builds by applying it. The spiritual master or representative gives some order, some instructions, some guidelines. One tries to apply it. One depends on Krishna. Krishna reciprocates and helps the devotee different ways. One may reveal to the devotee some deficiency. Sometimes Krishna's help is that a devotee is not successful because they're on some wrong platform, or there's some area that they should improve, or some other inexplicable reason. So this is like a test of the devotee's determination. But then by surrendering, even under different circumstances, the devotee can see how Krishna is actually present, how he's working. The devotee gets certain realizations by practically applying the process of Krishna consciousness in the association of devotees. So that builds up faith. So we have a lot of PhDs who read all about Indian philosophy, and they can tell you the different philosophies, but then if you ask them which one they believe in, they don't believe in anyone. Because they just know everything, but they never develop faith. To develop faith, you have to practice. By practicing, then gradually faith builds.
You were talking about people who come to Krishna consciousness with some sort of profession, and it's good if they can add a little touch of spiritual rhythm to. What about people who come without that profession? So if they come to Krishna consciousness, does that mean that they should give up any pursuit of any type of profession?
In particular service for Krishna, they could make inquiries, whether from senior devotees or the spiritual master, whether that type of activity would be. There are many devotees who learn different. Some devotees take up Gurukul teaching. They didn't know how to do it before. I get trained. I get a degree. I learned how to be a para engineer, paralegal, para, a lot of things. In India, I didn't know how to build construction, but now I know how to do construction in India, how to do agriculture, how to do a lot of things. So you can learn so many things. The previous system used to be apprenticeship, journeymanship. Then you become a master of something. Nowadays, you go for training for years and years and years in college. I talked to a boy, took initiation in Atlanta. He's the engineer for Pan Am Airline. He said whatever he uses in his job, working for Pan Am now for 6 years, he covered in the first 18 months of his schooling. The rest 5 years of his education, he never needs it. Never even comes out. Just like a kind of, so why do they teach it to you? He said, well, just to see if you, how good your brain is or something like that. Train your mind discipline. Either. So the Vedic system, if you get a little more specialized, possibly, you learn something, you do it. Sometimes it's not necessary to have a college degree to do something. One may just need to learn that particular thing. Sometimes you need a degree because of the law, like to be a teacher, a recognized teacher, you need a degree. But in some other cases, look at the computer business today. The biggest millionaires, a lot of them, they became millionaires because they didn't go to college. Going to college. And so by the time the others graduated, they already made their first millions of dollars. And now they're several billionaires, as far as making money is concerned. They don't have a college education. But they're considered, you know. So a lot of times to train, we have different preconceived notions about training. A person has a desire to do something for Krishna, has some abilities. There's no harm in developing that. If there's a need, if it's reasonable. Sometimes a person can do many things. There are even things a person can do doesn't know about it. So when there's something needed and they do it, then they learn a new field. We don't want to get into a a long, complicated training process that would take years out from our devotional activities under normal circumstance, unless it was something very important. I didn't say that it's very good that people know a profession. I said if someone knows the profession, he can practice it and still be Krishna conscious. I didn't say that everyone should go out and learn a profession. That's, you twisted the thing around. I said if someone knows a profession, they can practice it and be Krishna conscious. We also are training people up how, in new professions. We have many new professions. To be a brahmana, to be a counselor, to be a nurse or a physician in the hospital of birth, death, old age, and disease. These are new positions. If the intensive program that person can handle is doing regular devotional service, that's okay also, but recommended to do more chanting, do more intense preparation, be in a holy place. Sometimes it's difficult for people in the West to go to the holy places in India. That's certainly an ideal place to leave the body. The Bhagavatam said anywhere where a deity was worshipped is a holy place also. Yes?
Srila Chirpa, is it more important to become real useful to the movement or just to engage oneself in the service of Krishna?
What do you say?
I think it's more important to be engaged in the service no matter how useful one may be. Let's say a person who cannot be more useful because of his capabilities or limitations.
Well, it's a question of quality and quantity. One should be engaged in devotional service. That's like the quality. How much service a person can do, quantity, that may vary between different persons' capacities. So each person may have their own capacity. They should try to work or serve up to their maximum capacity and try to increase their capacity always. One shouldn't try to do the bare minimum. One should try to do the maximum.
Let's say an old person who is just learning about Krishna and that person wants to engage himself in the service, but he becomes more of an obstacle than a useful person. Will you say that person shouldn't be engaged?
You first ask about devotees. This is a person who is aspiring to be a devotee. It depends on the expertise of the administrators to engage such people and train them. So Prabhupada said it's better that people try to do devotional service while they still have some strength. In India, it's customary that someone, when they're just too old to do anything, then they suddenly think, well, now let me go to a temple and do some service, but they can't even hardly walk or see. They require constant care. So then the Shastra says, pancham urdham vanam brajet, one should dedicate themselves to spiritual life at the age of 50. First 25, your student life, studying, preparation. Next 25, your household life, your whatever you have to experience materially, you experience and get it out of the system, whatever. And then the last, from 50, you dedicate to spiritual life. We start to concentrate more. And the day you come, 75 years old or something, like, it's practically, so we don't have the facility for that. Unless they have to bring their own nurses and have a special fund. Don't have the infrastructure. If they come a little younger, then usually they don't get so senile. Devotees, even their old age, they remain, their minds are active, they're doing service, they don't age like that. But when you get someone who's already burned himself out in material life completely, they come in at the last leg, it's really difficult. It's a practical problem. So we have some devotees now making like, want to make old folks home and things like that. But basically, if they don't have, maybe in the future we'll have some. We need some government aid or something to take care of such people or some special charitable fund. Because it's a charitable thing like food relief. But if someone's not that old, they're still able to do something. They don't obstruct people so much in their service. I don't think it's like, you should basically try to ask philosophical questions. You ask these comments like trying to manage from the rear, like backseat driving. People think about something in the practical ashram and then they present that as a question and later on they'll present it to the chairman, to the president or someone, Jayapataka Swami. philosophical thing. The point's already there. We want to engage everyone, but there are so many practical circumstances. The Shastra says, come when you're 50. If a person's still able to do something, they may be a little bit ineffective in the beginning. There's so many bhaktas, they make a lot of trouble when they come sometimes. Dump the doll over on somebody's head or something. It's part of life, you know. It happens a little, you know, right? People spill milk. Then after they learn that that's a mistake, then either they're not given that service or given some other service, or they're trained not to make the mistake. If a person's willing to learn, then where's the problem? If a person is stubborn, doesn't want to learn, doesn't want to change his way of doing, because they're older or something, they don't want to learn anything, you know, well then it's difficult. If you come to the movement, you want to be an active part, you have to be willing to learn. If a person's willing to learn, even if they make mistakes, we're patient. We'll train him. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
The actual process of devotional service was taught by Rupa Goswami. So, also although Sanatana Goswami was senior by age, and in some ways Rupa Goswami was spiritually more preeminent, he had the blessing of a lot of direct association of Lord Chaitanya. And in the spiritual world, he's the ninth gopi, Rupa Manjari. After the eight sakis, he's the next. There's a lot of different reasons, but I don't know what. So basically, it's like we say, Bande Rupa Sanatana. Basically, he set the pace in terms of devotional service. He was all respectful to his elder brother, but he was responsible for the teaching, how we should practice Krishna consciousness. So we call Rupa Nugas. There's a total harmony. They're all together, the six Goswamis. Sanatana Goswami's teachings, Hari Bhakti Vilas, deal with how to perform festivals, how to perform, it's like a handbook, different ritual. That was helped by Gopal Bhatta Goswami. Jiva Goswami basically preached the principles taught by Rupa Goswami. Their disciple, in one sense. He's their nephew. But he came after they did, and he took, it's like their disciple, actually. Raghunath Das didn't write so many books. He was assistant. Actually, he told different things from his notebook to Krishnadas Kaviraj. So then he wrote down. That's why he says Rupa Raghunath. So Raghunath learned by being the personal assistant of Lord Chaitanya, the assistant to Srup Damodar. He passed on to Krishnadas Kaviraj. That's for us. Chaitanya Charitamrita is so important in literature, the most important. Also, Krishnadas Kaviraj learned from Rupa Goswami. Any other question? Well, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said that he would not accept an offering from a disciple and offer it to Krishna if they didn't chant 64 rounds. He said if they didn't chant 64 rounds in a day, he considered them fallen. Although I don't see anybody chanting 64 rounds in the Gaudiya Math today, but that's neither here nor there. Of course, I don't judge any disciples of Bhakti Siddhanta being their Shishya Varga, their disciple level. But Prabhupada wanted initially to introduce 25 rounds a day, but he saw it was very difficult for devotees in the West. So then he opted finally for 16, that was enough. But then along with that, he gave a program of intensive preaching and devotional service. You see, sometimes you see that, well, like in India, some of these different temples, they have a system where they have a much more low-key kind of program in terms of preaching. They stress more just talking about Krishna or other things. Maybe in one sense, I don't know who they're... they might claim that was the old system during the time of Bhakti Siddhanta, but I also have my doubts about that. Because during that time, Bhakti Siddhanta, he was doing such dynamic preaching. He had the first one to have a motor vehicle. He had two motor launches, two yachts going up and down the Ganges preaching. He had horses. He had took 50,000 people around in processions and things. Built 64 temples. I don't think that there's any question that Bhakti Siddhanta didn't have an intensive preaching program, but he'd have everyone get up early and chanting 64 rounds. But Srila Prabhupada, he said that if you chant 16 rounds and engage 24 hours a day in a Krishna conscious process, don't break the four principles,
you achieve Krishna consciousness by His mercy. So we follow that system. He could adjust, but if we think that, well, we can just chant 16 rounds and not preach or not serve, not be otherwise engaged in Krishna consciousness, how can we be sure that we also be able to claim that same mercy from Prabhupada? There'd definitely be an element of doubt whether or not we could actually expect that same mercy. We're not fully following then the process given by Prabhupada of going back to Godhead in one lifetime. So even Haridas Thakur said that if one preaches the glories of chanting, that by helping others to advance, that eradicates one's own anarthas and offenses. By preaching, you can purify yourself so that the chanting is 100 times more effective. Loud chanting is 100 times more effective than soft chanting. So Prabhupada had us chant 16 rounds loud. Maybe the 4 rounds were not all loud, some might have been very soft. But that's why Prabhupada is 16, loud, spoken, you should hear it. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Why can't I chant mentally? You can chant mentally after 16. Chant 16, spoken. After that, if you want, Haridas Thakur used to chant 64 loud, 64 soft, and 64 mentally, 300,000. So after you do, if you chant your first 16, like you can follow that system, then it's right. If you're only chanting 16 rounds, then you chant it loud. Because you need the extra, if that's what you're chanting, it should get the maximum effect from chanting. So then I remember one time I thought, well, I'm going to chant 32 rounds. I'm a sannyasi, I should chant 32. So I was sitting in the Calcutta temple chanting my 32 rounds. Prabhupada came out and looked and said it was already like about 10 or 11 o'clock, I forget. He said, what are you doing? So I'm chanting. He said, well, chanting my 32 rounds, He says, what? He says, I already don't chant more than 16 rounds. If you stay here and chant 32 rounds, who's going to go out and preach? You chant your 16 rounds and go out and preach. You want to stay the whole day chanting. Maybe Bhaktisiddhanta changed his standard when he was out preaching. I don't know the exact. I just saw a writing once where he said, if you don't chant 64, we'll accept your offering. But maybe he changed it later. I don't know the... I never even asked Prabhupada, it wasn't important to know what was the standard before. Sometimes now, the people want to analyze the previous standard, the previous systems, and then try to imitate that. But I mean, it's a totally different world, I don't really personally see how it applies to us, because Prabhupada, he knew what was going on, and knowing that, he knew what we were, where we are, what is the world today, where we are spiritually, he told us, you do this. This is the standard, you maintain it. So I don't have any question that whatever Prabhupada gave us, that is especially suited for us. He was the doctor, we're the patient, he gave us the diagnosis, he gave us the treatment, he gave us the diet, he gave us the medicine. We simply have to take it, it works. If I want to go and see what a previous doctor did for a previous patient, how do I know it's going to apply to me? Even if we can find out what he had prescribed, we don't know what he diagnosed, their disease may not be the same as what we had. Neither were they the same kind of people. So therefore, we're under the birth, death, old age, disease hospitals. We read last night, Prabhupada said, we're establishing the birth, death, old age, and disease hospitals. Says there's no bona fide hospital to cure birth, death, old age, and disease. So we have established in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So in this hospital, we follow the system of medicine as handed down through A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada, keep Any other question? Ranganath ji.
What if the spiritual masters in the future decide that there's more adjustments that are needed? For example, maybe we need to change our dress or chant less rounds or have a lower standard.
Well, certainly there's no need of any immediate change. Prabhupada has given us the basic standard. Things haven't changed that much. And who's qualified to do that? Prabhupada said he didn't want any acharyas to be appointed. There shouldn't be like a head of the institution that can just change things. He said in the future there might be some kind of, so the cream rises to the top, there may be some type of person somewhere in the future that comes. He didn't indicate that there was anyone immediately that he foresaw. But in the future, might be that someone comes up like that. But this is a very big topic. And for that, the Prabhupada also established a governing body commission to be like a check and balance to see that the basic teachings of Prabhupada are protected and not whimsically changed. Everything you just said has already been covered by Prabhupada. Now, somebody wants to increase the number of rounds in the future, the scope for that. But since Prabhupada promised that, well, if you chant 16, follow the four principles, I take you back to Godhead. If someone in the future wants to reduce that, then there's a very big question whether that person is also going to have that capacity to guarantee to take you back to Godhead. What are his credentials? And rather, we see that as the Krishna conscious movement preaches, and people should be becoming more Krishna conscious, when things become a little more peaceful, when there's less preaching to do, say the whole world becomes much more civilized and Krishna conscious, probably it'll go the other way. Okay, now you should chant 32 rounds because there's less preaching to do. Or now you should chant 64 rounds. To reduce it, that leaves a big question of doubt. Prabhupada said that he would wear karmi clothes, for instance, he would wear a suit and tie if that would promote the preaching. He was convinced of that, he'd do it. Some certain scopes are given. But the question remains whether it really, he didn't think it would increase the preaching. For himself at least. But he authorized the disciples. If there's supposed to be some kind of a society, you know, a very serious change, that there's some question of its validity, then the governing body commission is supposed to analyze the teachings of Prabhupada to see whether in fact these are proposed changes would actually be valid or not. That's the thing that he wanted, to just be a double check, because one individual might think something might not work out. Prabhupada also, if you make a little change in spiritual life, that can create a big havoc. If it's not authorized. He was so insistent. I remember one time, I was chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, you know, I was chanting in the kirtan, and I saw some of the devotees, they weren't chanting. So then I just yelled out, Bolo! It's in India, you know, Bolo, I mean, chant! How do you get in the proper call? So don't add any new words to the mantra. he was very afraid. He said, the problem with you Westerners is you always want to change. One time he made a joke. He said, stand on your head, clap your feet, just do something new, do something new. This is your American or your Western disease. For the sake of doing something new, just do something, you know. It's like you have to do something. If you're doing, everything's going great, right? Nothing's broken. Even if it's not broke, you gotta fix it, right? You gotta do something new. He was afraid that this idea, everything's going along, people have things, you just gotta do something new, just for the sake of being new. See, Prabhupada was very conservative. The Indian civilization in general, the Vedic culture, it doesn't change. That's the beauty of it. It remains, it's a constant. And just like the clothing, it's so simple. See, everyone that is sari, dhoti, it's one cloth. Very simple, not very complicated. Of course, maybe here in the West you need the warmer cloth because it's in America it's cold. But this is the beauty and simplicity of the Vedic culture. Teachings of Prabhupada are sublime. If we start to change things when it's unnecessary, just to show that we're different, I got a new idea, can get distracted from the real purpose, unnecessarily make things complicated. So that's why everything one does should be backed by Veda Praman. Now for the sake of preaching, sometimes something can be done. But then one has to see whether the actual preaching is there. Certain things are definitely taboo. Playing around with mantras, changing the teachings, changing the rituals. These are very dangerous. The techniques of book distribution or the techniques of getting the people to engage in Krishna consciousness, there's an area where there's a little scope for creative application in the preaching field. Because yena tena prakarena krishna mana nivosade by bringing the people to Krishna. But then the more that kind of gets into our traditional teachings and practices, it becomes a bit precarious. Going out and meeting the people, maybe, with some scope. Hare Krishna. Yeah.